Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors, dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. For some communities, high school sports are the beating heart of the community. For some individuals, participating in high school sports becomes an experience that helps forge a personal identity. Later this hour, we'll talk about the culture of high school sports with sociologist Heather Kaufman. But first, sports reporter John Naughton just celebrated his 30th anniversary at the Des Moines Register. We've invited him to join us to take a look back over the last three decades. Hello, John.
Hi, Charity. How are you?
Great. Thank you so much for being here today.
Well, thank you so much for having me. Appreciate it.
Now, did you grow up in Iowa?
I did. I grew up in the Des Moines area really was interested in sports from an early age. I recall being a little kid getting out the sports section of the paper and reading it from the Des Moines Register and just following in sports and kind of enjoying the participation of things, as well as just being a spectator as a kid.
So when you decided to pursue a degree in journalism, was sports reporting always the plan?
I think I started off as a sports writer in college, and that was kind of one of my first interests. However, after I did that for a while, I tried some things more on the news side of operations and enjoyed everything I was able to do. But when I ended up getting a job at the Register 30 years ago, it was in sports, and I kind of stuck to that, found it was something that I enjoyed going to work and working with all the people, not only at the paper, but also out in the communities involved in high school sports. And so that really became a passion for me.
So when you were a kid growing up and reading the sports page, who influenced you? Who were the writers that inspired you then?
I remember, reading both the Des Moines Register and the Des Moines Tribune quite a bit. And all the sports writers there, and as well as the syndicated columnist, were people I kind of followed, and I suppose it would be the equivalent of a kid now who had a Twitter account and could follow some of these sports writers and kind of seeing what they're up to. But I enjoyed the just being part of Iowa and also not just the newspaper part of things, but also, the strong coverage the state has of high school sports on the radio stations and TV as well.
When you were in college and working as a student journalist in college, you covered one of the toughest stories of your life. We've just celebrated, or not celebrated, marked the 30th anniversary not that long ago of when a small plane crashed, killing three members of Iowa State University's women's cross-country team, two coaches, a student trainer, and the pilot. That was an important story for you in your student career. What do you remember about that experience?
I remember, this is in the days before the internet was common, nowadays you would get people dispersing that news of the story on a much quicker basis. But it was just after our holiday break had concluded at school, and we heard this report of a plane crash, and we had to get on the phone and start calling people, it was, a very difficult situation, heartbreaking at the time, because you're calling people and you're trying to verify, was this person killed in a plane crash, or is this person still alive? Is this coach that followed the team just a few hours earlier, and all of a sudden you're talking to this person and he's breaking down crying on the phone. It's something that they really don't teach you in journalism school. It's just something that you might have to learn on your own.
So what do you think you took away from that experience?
I think to me it was just the importance of telling somebody's story, and not being sensitive to the people that you talk to. You know, there's a human being on the other side of the phone, on the other side of that email now, you want to treat that person with respect. And if it's a person who says that, you know, this is too emotional for me, I can't talk right now, you got to respect that.
When you started working at the Register covering sports, of course, I think a lot of people probably assume that sports journalism is mostly about who won and who lost. And of course, that's part of the job. But was there an experience, or were there a few experiences in those early years where you felt like you really were learning the ropes of sports journalism, where you really became a journalist?
I think one of those moments was simply a bit of advice I received from a sports editor. And he always emphasized that the fan in the stands who attends an event is going to know that score. They already know who won or lost. And so when you come out with your story, you need to give the reader something else that they don't have. Give them that behind-the-scenes story. Give them the information about the kid who has written down a message of her deceased father on her shoe, some information about the boy who's also happened to celebrate a birthday that day, something that the reader doesn't understand from simply going to the game. That was his advice, and that's always stuck with me, whether it be covering an event or writing a feature story about someone, or producing an investigative piece, something that will really kind of make it worth the reader's time to enjoy that story, especially even if you're a non-sports fan. You know, how can you draw that reader into the story?
So when you go to a sporting event, clearly you try to remain unbiased. You're not cheering for a team. Your experience of being at that event must be very different from the fan in the stands. So what's it like? What do you do? How do you find those stories?
It is absolutely a different experience than being a fan. And if you ever take me to a sporting event of any kind, you will say, that guy is a terrible fan because he's not cheering for anybody. And it's treated as your job. And most sports writers kind of fall into two schools. There are ones that know everything about all the sports. They know all the names of the players. They know all the teams going up to professionals. And there are others, perhaps a bit more like me, that it's a job and you love doing your job, but you have a life outside of your job and you enjoy doing other things that have nothing to do with sports. But when I go to that high school event, I'm actually always careful that I check my wardrobe so I'm not blatantly wearing a school color. And, you know, that's kind of a different experience than if you're a small town journalist who is kind of seen as a supporter of the community, right, and supporting of the local high schools. But I don't want some parent to think, you know, this guy is showing up as a fan of this other team and you know, he's got some sort of conflict, you know, just like people might assume other things, like, you know, what school you go to or your if you have a long-term relationship with somebody at a particular school. It really you keep things as professional as you can, and that's what I do. I mean, you can still have fun, but I might say ooh if somebody makes a big play, but I'm not going to be applauding.
So how do you find the little stories? Because, you know, again, most of us were there to watch the game.
Yeah, it is really a fascinating process for getting some of these, especially the feature type stories that I think a lot of people enjoy reading, because it's kind of, in a way, life away from sports for high school kids. And, you know, it may be something like I get a tip from a parent. You know, it used to be a phone call or somebody at school. It could be somebody says, you know, you need to write a story about this. And now it's more like an email, a tweet. But it can be just you're there interviewing an athlete, and you're kind of thinking that the story might go a certain way, and all of a sudden this unexpected line of information comes out, and the story's heading in another direction. Example of that was interviewing Kiana Phelps, who was a four-time state champion, really one of the great track performers that has been produced in the state of Iowa, four-time discus champ, all that stuff. And she said, when I interviewed her up in Kingsley, that she'd been bullied because, you know, there were some conflicts she had with people over the years. And, you know, when she's packing her bags for international competition and somebody's, you know, saying something bad about her on social media, you know, that story came out, and that was a surprise for me because, you know, who would expect this champion athlete at that level would be the victim of such things. So you have to listen. You have to have good ears and be willing to kind of work with people on particular stories.
Do you feel like high school sports culture has changed during the 30 years that you've been covering it?
I think the basics of high school sports in the state of Iowa have changed. There have been obviously structural differences when you're talking about the emergence of sports like soccer and bowling even now that we have in the state of Iowa. But everybody is always proud of their local schools, proud of their communities. You may have some different configurations as schools enter into sharing agreements for high school sports. That's usually kind of one of the steps along the way of,
right,
of reorganization.
Some growing pains there.
Yeah. And that's always interesting because sometimes you have rivals that are suddenly teammates.
Right. Well, we're going to talk more about that in just a moment. I'm talking with John Naughton. He just celebrated his 30th anniversary at the Des Moines Register, covering high school sports for three decades. We're talking about high school sports this hour. You're welcome to join the conversation with some of your favorite memories of high school sports. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. This is Talk of Iowa.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors, dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about high school sports. Later in the hour, we'll talk more about the culture of high school sports, and you're welcome to join the conversation, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me right now is Des Moines Register sports reporter John Naughton. He recently celebrated his 30th anniversary at the Register, and we're taking a look back over 30 years of covering high school sports in Iowa. And John, just before the break, we were talking about kind of the evolution, some of the changes that you've seen in high school sports in Iowa. And you mentioned school consolidation, which of course is a big change that we've seen across the state. So sometimes you have now communities that used to be sports rivals playing together on the same team. How have you witnessed that? Have you seen some difficult moments because of that?
Well, I think I haven't seen a lot of that close up. But, you know, if you ventured into, say, school board meetings, I think that's the time that you would see the most of that because those are really sensitive issues for all the communities involved in schools. But there is my experience that when a couple of strong athletic schools get together, there's always a boost. I mean, you know, like it or not, you know, you might have, 20 really good girls basketball players or 20 really good boys basketball players that are not going to be able to all get onto the varsity. But as far as the teams go, there's this real infusion of athletic talent, a lot of cases. So it's not uncommon to see those new configurations get to the state tournament, maybe even win a state championship within just a year or two of the schools kind of coming together.
I live in Iowa City now, and I think about how, you know, sporting events taking place in Iowa City, if you're in the neighborhood, you can hear the roar from the football stadium, and some people can walk to the game, and there's a lot of activity around the game. With these consolidated school districts, that pulls the game, that pulls this event outside of the community in many cases. I mean, people are all driving there. There's not so much community outside the event. Do you think that that's impacted the scene?
I think for most of the kids, they make that adjustment a lot easier than a lot of the parents and alumni of particular high schools, because the kids are seeing each other every day, and a new school, they're both kind of building the foundation of a new school, and I think generally they take that with some pretty serious attitudes. But, the adult fans who might have been, really harsh rivals and things like that over the years ago, I think they still kind of carry that a little bit. But I think that success has a way of remedying a lot of problems.
One of the big changes that we've seen in sports in recent years and recent decades is the rise of the club culture. So a lot of kids are participating in a sport year round. They'll compete at their school, but they're also competing for a club. Have you seen an impact of that?
Absolutely. I think that kind of stems from back in the days of AAU basketball with The kids from Palmer, Iowa. I mean, they really made a big difference in that town and the way it was seen throughout the state of Iowa when Troy Skinner, Brian Pearson, and those teams, they played a lot of AAU basketball, and they found that, it made a real difference in the way they played during the season. Now, that school is not around anymore. We're talking about reorganizations, but that kind of established a culture that, the state of Iowa can produce really good basketball players. And we've seen programs, one example, the All-Iowa Attack when it comes to basketball. But a lot of these sports really have had national success when we're talking about boys and girls basketball. Volleyball is a big one. There have been some great runners that participate in a lot of different things, like track clubs that can give them a boost during the summer. So for elite athletes, that makes a difference. There are also a lot of athletes that will also be multi-sport athletes, a lot of coaches will tell you that makes really good athletes as well. So, there is some specialization, and there is continued multiple sport athletes, but, both are a little bit different, but in some cases it's the same kids doing both.
Now, you mentioned the fan in the stands. There can be some deep passions when it comes to high school sports from fans, but also parents. What are the pitfalls of being a sports journalist who's covering high school students dealing with parents?
Yeah, we're always taught to be respectful of people who may see one name in the paper or one name on the website and say, why isn't my kid getting that coverage? And to some parents, they have a notion that, my kid is going to be a Division I athlete and get a scholarship for whatever sport that may be. And, we certainly applaud the efforts of any athletes that desire that to work toward that goal. If you tell me to that, you're criticizing one kid instead of another, that's that's not right to me. You know, you shouldn't say that I'm going to bring down the star of the team because you know, I have certain notions about my own child. And so, again, you take that you treat the person with respect. You know, you don't try to drop to a level of, you know, a shouting match or anything like that.
You cover varsity sports. That makes a lot of sense probably to most of us. Do you catch a lot of flack for not covering junior varsity?
Generally not. I mean, it's the lower levels of most sports are where kids learn. You know, that's where they're getting the training. That's where they're really developing. And I think for the most part, we try to kind of back off and let kids be kids. Now, by the time they get to the varsity, you know, as soon as you put on that uniform that has your school name on the front and your name on the back, it's a different level of responsibility, I think. And most of the stuff we write about kids, you know, 99.9% is really good news. You're celebrating the accomplishments of young people. And so if it's hard news, you know, a junior varsity kid has, you know, a serious injury from some sort of event, or you know, the JV school bus you know, gets a flat tire or something like that on the way to a meet, then you know, maybe that's a different consideration. But we try to apply standards across the board. The other exception might be if it's a really good story about a JV kid that you want to share that, and it's a positive thing. I think people like to read those as well, even if we're not there covering every event that the team plays.
Do you have a favorite sport to cover?
People ask me that, and I will say I like covering the one that gets over the soonest. because your deadlines, you know, they're still really critical to doing your job. You know, you've got to get your story in at 10 o'clock and not 10:30. So it's a concern as far as that goes. But I like everything in season. You know, there's something special about being at a football game on a Friday night during the fall. There's something really exciting about being at the state wrestling tournaments and the basketball tournaments during the sort of February swing and March swing that they have. And then, you know, it turns to spring again, and all of a sudden you're outside covering a track meet at the Drake Relays, Drake Stadium. You know, that's really a lot of fun.
Where the weather's always nice.
Well, yeah, I can't do anything about that, that's for sure.
So what is your work week like? I mean, clearly you're not going to every game that you cover, but most of these events don't happen during what many of us consider to be the workday.
Yeah, you're never really an 8-to-4, a 9-to-5 person that punches a clock and then leaves. You know, our news cycle is really, in a way, 24 hours now. I mean, you know, what if you're at home on a Sunday and you get a see something that happens that's news? Well, you know, you're not going to sit around and say, well, that can wait until Monday. You've got to get on it. And you know, a lot of it nowadays is trying to find those really deep stories that people care about. You know, the athletes that, you know, they have a special story to tell. And you're just telling that to the readers and the public.
You have been doing this for a long time. That's why we're talking about it, obviously, today. But so you have seen a lot of changes in schools. You've seen the programs develop over many years. You've seen parents and then their kids competing. How do you keep track of that stuff, or does it kind of surprise you sometimes?
Sometimes what you'll do is you'll see a familiar name, and it may be that name that you associate with a particular town. You know, whether that be, you know, Carlisle, and you see a name and think, didn't do you have an older brother or parent who used to compete for your high school? And so you'll come across that. And then a lot of it is just having a, you know, I've been blessed with at least a halfway decent memory. So when I went down last week to Martinsdale to interview an athlete, I asked, you know, if this very tall basketball player had, had parents that played basketball, and he said yes, he did, and then he mentioned his mom's maiden name, and it's Jill Uke, and it's like, I covered her when she was a six-player basketball star. A forward from North Iowa, so it's really kind of funny how you just being around so long, these relationships kind of enjoy a second life in some respects.
Now, this is an unfair question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. So, out of 30 years, is there a story, or maybe two stories, that really stand out to you that you're really proud of having a part in telling?
I've been working on kind of this list of 30 stories that I covered in 30 years that I thought kind of stuck out, and stories and projects, and some were co-written with other sports writers and other Register reporters, and some were just all mine. But it's really, after so many years, it's kind of tough to narrow it down to even that type of a number. I just keep coming up with these, and I know I'm forgetting some, but you know, with that long of a career, and unfortunately we're not seeing people with 30 years in the business as often as we used to when I first started the Register, but they really pile up, and if you're very fortunate, there are a lot of good stories that you can tell. Some of them, you know, deal with the human tragedy, and it's still, I think, most of those we see young people who are inspired to bounce back from injuries, to take these heavy emotional issues, the loss of a parent or a friend, relative, and really kind of get on back on track. The kids are, I think, a lot more resilient than we give them credit for.
Is there one of those stories on the list that pops into your head right now that you could tell us about?
Well, I think one of the ones that I did with Bryce Miller, who was a former reporter at the Register, columnist, sports editor, assistant sports editor, and we co-wrote a project that involved football, the safety on football fields. We found that we did a survey, and how many of these football games, you know, do they actually have good care? Should they need some sort of crisis care for an athlete? You know, if that particular athlete, you know, is in need for emergency medical condition, are they going to get the type of condition they need and deserve, or is there going to be a problem? And we found, I think, that schools could be doing more, and it was really a story, I think, that made some changes in the state of Iowa. I mean, now the relationship between athletic teams and certified athletic trainers and other medical professionals has never been closer than before. Everything is kind of safety on the sidelines now, and I would like to think that our project we did on that had just a teeny portion of being able to kind of change that.
What advice would you have for a young journalist starting out in your line of work as a sports reporter?
I think read a lot and write a lot is what the advice was given to me by a Register reporter when I was still a high school student, and I kind of stand by that. Trying to find examples of good storytelling, and you know, stories now are much more beyond the sporting event when you're talking about high school athletes, and you know that there are good feature stories out there, and you need to find those. Also, you know, reach out to those people that are professionals, and I think most of them are absolutely eager to help out people who are interested in not only sports writing or broadcasting, but journalism as a whole.
Are you sometimes surprised by the breadth of what you cover? I mean, recently you've not only told personal stories and sports stories, but politics, and so many things seem to play out on our basketball courts and our football fields.
I think so. It's really kind of a fascinating thing, because you really never expected some things to just kind of be the snowball rolling downhill as they turn out to be in some cases, and we're just part of a microcosm of this big world.
John Naughton, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thank you, Charity. Appreciate it.
John Naughton just celebrated his 30th anniversary at the Des Moines Register, covering high school sports for 30 years. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about high school sports, and we're going to shift to talking a little bit more about the culture of high school sports. We all know they're a big deal in Iowa and pretty much everywhere else. For some, this is where identities are forged for both individuals and communities. And with us to help us understand the culture is Heather Kaufman. She is a lecturer at Iowa State University. She has a PhD in sports sociology. Hello, Heather.
Hi.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And I was talking with John Naughton a little bit about how important high school sports can be in a community. But let's start by talking a little bit more about how it affects individuals. We have this email from David in Waukee. He said, having participated in high school two-a-day football practices under the hot August sun, I was confident upon being drafted into the military at the age of 24 that I would be able to take whatever basic training dished out. And I was correct. So here's a man who participated in high school sports, maybe didn't go on to become an athlete, but that was an important part of his identity. Is that something that you feel is an important part of this culture of high school sports?
Yeah, definitely. There are lots of positive things that come from participation in sport, and hard work and learning. One of the things we talk about in my class that I teach at Iowa State is about sport building character. We have this debate, does sport build character or does it reveal character? And, some of those characteristics that we see that are needed for sport are things that we also see, as we go on and do other things in our profession or whatever field we might choose to be in. So lots of positive things that come from sport that we see.
Right. What are some of the positive? What are some of the positive things that we see?
So, like I said, the hard work, teamwork, those 2 days in the hot August weather, learning how to you learn that hard work, dedication, and how those can help carry over to, military or boot camp or whatever you might be choosing down the road.
With some of the sports culture that we see, I mean, we do tend to, in our society, have an obsession with winning. I was just reflecting over the weekend on pictures that I saw from wrestling tournaments of friends' kids who'd been competing, and the boy who won looked very happy, and second and third place, not happy at all. I mean, let's talk about our focus on winning, because even along with all of those great things that come with sports, not everybody can win.
Right. Yes. And and we talk a lot about how sport is a microcosm of society. And that's what competition is, what drives our society. We see it in all aspects. Whether it's in the classroom or in a job, in sporting events. Definitely that competition. And we have this idea of meritocracy, that the person that works the hardest or puts the most time in is the one that's going to be the winner and come out ahead in the end. And as you said, unfortunately, a lot of those places, you talk about state tournaments and wrestling tournaments and things, and really there's only one person in a lot of those that are going to end their season with a win. You know, and as they talk about some of the things that you learn from sport, one of those also is how do you overcome that if you're not the top person? You know, if you're second or third place and, you know, you're disappointed with that, how do you overcome that? Or if you have a big loss, how do you overcome that to come back and win the next time out? So all those things that we can learn from sport and how to, you know, that competition, and it drives us every day. You know, humans, our society is driven by competition.
We like to think about sports as an arena or an area in life where it doesn't matter what your background is, that everybody, you know, has an equal opportunity on the playing field, and a great player may come from anywhere. Is that reality?
I would say, in my opinion, no, and a lot of the research and readings I've done and what we spend a lot of time talking about in my classes, that's not necessarily the case. You know, a lot of times we want to think that's what's happening and that everybody has an equal opportunity, but in reality, you have to look at other factors like social class and race and gender, and all those things kind of work together to provide somebody with an opportunity. Obviously, there's always exceptions to the rule. You know, some people... it doesn't matter. You know, they have that ability, they have that talent, and they're going to be successful. But you know, you talk about social class, and I think you were talking in the previous segment about more AAU teams and traveling teams, and those things are costly. And having special, you know, coaches, having, you know, baseball having a hitting coach outside in the off season. All of that is at a price and costs money, and people that have the resources are the ones that are more likely to be able to do that, which is going to put them ahead and set them apart from other people that don't. And so why we like to think that everybody has that same opportunity, from my experiences, from my research, what I've read out there, that's not the case.
Is that disparity growing larger?
Yes, especially with, you know, you see... The culture of sport in high school is changing a little bit, where it used to be about the high school and the team within the school, and now you have a lot of people going and playing on different elite teams in the off season, playing on their own, not with their team. So, for example, you know, you have high school basketball player that goes and plays on a elite team in the off season instead of working with their own teammates to become better. And so it's... you know, you don't have that same opportunity across the board.
Right. I've noticed a few stories in recent years actually about track and field athletes who end up just forgoing their school's athletics altogether because it mm-hmm. interferes with their competition season. I mean, do you see in some ways high school sports becoming secondary to this club culture?
Yeah, definitely. Yes. You know, and you walk through... our high schools, and you know, I'm just speaking from, you know, my high school personally, the one that I'm around mostly, and you see people wearing shirts and things for their elite travel teams rather than focusing on the culture of their high school and their, you know, supporting their high school themselves, and you know, so that's a big difference as well. People foregoing playing certain sports, and we see a big push with specialization right now. You know, we see people maybe choosing to play, for example, I know some individuals play, you know, baseball all year round, and choose not to participate in basketball or football or whatever because they're playing baseball. So people are choosing to specialize and foregoing participating in other sports as well. And so we're seeing more of the specialization rather than the diversification of sport. And kind of to tie that back with the identity that we started talking about at the beginning, you know, we have this then unidimensional identity where everything about ourselves is tied up into one sport, instead of either having multiple sports or focus on other areas, whether it's the fine arts or, you know, academics or, you know, any other area that somebody might be interested in. And what we see happening, and this happens at the professional level, the collegiate level, is that at some point, sport is going to come to an end for everyone. You know, the competition And what happens when you've put all your eggs in one basket, so to speak, when that identity is no longer there? You know, you are playing a certain sport through high school or through college, and then you discontinue for whatever reason. You know, what happens? And if we have a multidimensional identity, we have another identity to fall back on. But what we see is that those athletes that focus solely on their athletic identity, when that athletic identity is no longer there, they have a hard time establishing themselves again, figuring out who they are, you know, what's important to them. And that's when we see some of these professional athletes that have trouble with alcohol or drugs or, you know, getting in trouble with the law and really struggling in other areas because they don't have another identity to fall back on.
Well, and not even professional athletes. I mean, we've seen that with Olympic athletes, for example.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yes. Across the board, you know, it happens with collegiate athletes. You know, even a personal example, you know, myself playing in high school and going and playing 1 year in college and then, you know, no longer playing after that. So it happens at all levels. And no matter what reason you discontinue sport, whether it's burnout or an injury that was unexpected or just a choice not to participate, a transition in life, you know, it really doesn't matter the reason why. If you don't have another identity to fall back on, we see people struggling with that.
You, of course, are teaching students who have very recently experienced high school.
Yes. Yes.
So they're experts on this kind of culture.
Uh-huh.
With the change, the push towards specialization and club sports, do your students feel like the athletes are driving that, or do they think it's coming from somewhere else?
It's interesting what I've learned in working with college students, too. And as I've gotten older and have a bigger age gap with the college students, you know, it's different opinions and feelings on that. You know, because I would say from what I've learned from the students, a lot of times they feel that, yes, the students are pushing that, but also I think there's a lot of parents that are pushing that. I've had a lot of students say that they've worked, either they themselves or they've coached, worked with younger kids, and they find the parents are the ones that want this more than the kids. I had a student who was coached gymnastics, which that's a sport you really have to specialize in, and at a young age,
right?
Because the peak age, you know, you peak it, your teenage years, 16, 17 with gymnastics. And so she said as she was working with some of these 3 and 4 year olds, they really didn't know what they were there for. They just wanted to be there and have fun. And the parents were the ones that were pushing them and driving them to be there and be the best because they wanted them to get to the Olympics or, you know, whatever that next level would be for them.
And I can see a lot of pitfalls possibly developing when the parents are driving that. Of course, we've recently had this terrible case in gymnastics where we've been listening to the women who were abused by Larry Nassar, who was the doctor both at Michigan State University and USA Gymnastics. But related to that, I was just reading an article about one of the very well-known, highly considered gymnastics clubs in Lansing, and about the coach that was there, who also coached with USA Gymnastics, but the kind of coaching culture that he fostered, which was angry and either abusive or borderline abusive. And I was thinking about the fact that the young women that he worked with endured this kind of environment, but their parents, you know, wiped their tears, either comforted their girls or reinforced what the coach was saying and told them that they had to get through it. The culture of sports, that drive to be the best, do you worry that allows for an abusive culture?
Yeah, definitely. And that's one of the things I've talked to my students about as well, too, is that, you know, the way some of these coaches treat athletes, you know, if I would talk to my students like that in the classroom, or if you had a high school teacher talk to your students like that in the classroom, you know, there would be some significant repercussions, or, you know, may not even have a job. But it is worrisome that we allow that behavior to, or that treatment of athletes, we kind of brush it aside, or we don't worry about it as much. especially if it's a successful program. You know, I think we accept more, willing to accept that if the program is successful, if the program is winning, than if there is no success there.
A lot of parents, a lot of students also are in the hunt for college scholarships with athletics. And I've read some articles recently about the amount of money that parents are spending on that batting coach and thinking, you know, that you could pay for college with that kind of investment instead of hoping for that college scholarship. Do you feel like the scholarship emphasis is a pitfall as well?
Definitely, yeah. And it's interesting that you bring that up because, yeah, there's a lot of parents now that are paying money for these special lessons or travel teams or whatever, and they're paying their money up front in order to help their kids get a college scholarship. So really they are paying that money, but it's just when they're younger as opposed to for their college education. You know, and I can't remember the exact number off the top of my head, but, you know, the number of high school athletes that are going to go on and get a college scholarship is a fraction, right? And then it's even smaller of those people that are going to go on and play as a professional athlete. And so, you know, parents are pushing their kids to help them. They want them to work hard and putting this money in investing so that they can get a college scholarship, when in reality, very, very limited number of these high school athletes are going to receive a college scholarship.
Now, we've been focusing on negatives quite a bit. What do you think is the best thing about our high school sports culture? What are maybe not just the best thing, but what are some of the things that you really love about it that you think are super positive?
I find when I try to point out some of these things in my class that I feel like we do sometimes bring up the negative a lot. And I say that to my students. I'm like, yes, I feel like we talk about the negatives, but there are so many positives to high school sports. You know, and we started off saying the teamwork, the learning hard work, learning that if you put in the time, put in the work, it's going to hopefully pay off in the end and being successful. You know, just being part of something. You know, there's a lot of research out there, too, that shows with high school athletes that we see better graduation rates, higher GPAs, things like that. So academically, there's a connection as well between sport and academic scores. So, you know, there's all kinds of positive things that come from it as well.
All right. So we can't lose the good by looking at
right.
the bad.
Yes. And that's one of the things I tell my students. I say, you know, I just want to, you know, we look at things with rose-colored glasses, I guess, if you will, you know, that we want to say everything is so good. And one of the things that we talk about is this great sport myth is what we call it, that sport is pure and good and everything that comes from sport is good, and that's not always the case. While there are wonderful things that come from sport and it's a great thing, you know, I was an athlete myself and I enjoyed it and had some very positive experience from it. But there are some other things that we need to look at as well.
Well, Heather Kaufman, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Heather Kaufman is a lecturer at Iowa State University. She has a PhD in sports sociology. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe.